By the most holy names of the angels in the Book of Asamayan, I conjure thee that thou assist me in this operation by the power of the one true God.
Andros now lowered the knife and carefully pierced the large vein on the right wing of the panicked bird. The crow began to bleed. As he watched the stream of red liquid flowing down into the metal cup he had placed as a receptacle, he felt an unexpected chill in the air. Nonetheless, he continued,
Almighty Adonai, Eratron, Ashai, Elohim, Elohai, Elion, Asherechai, Shaddai, be my aid, so that this blood may have power and efficacy in all wherein I shall wish, and in all that I shall demand.
That night, he dreamed of birds, of a giant phoenix rising from a billowing fire. The next morning, he awoke with an energy he had not felt since childhood. He went running in the park, faster and farther than he'd imagined possible. When he could run no longer, he stopped to do push-ups and sit-ups, countless repetitions. Still he had energy. That night, again, he dreamed of the phoenix. Autumn had fallen again on Central Park, and the wildlife were scurrying about searching for food for winter. Andros despised the cold, and yet his carefully hidden traps were now overflowing with live rats and squirrels. He took them home in his backpack, performing rituals of increasing complexity.
Immanuel, Mashiach, Yod, He, Vod, please find me worthy.
The blood rituals fueled his vitality. Andros felt younger every day. He continued to read day and night, ancient mystical texts, epic medieval poems, the early philosophers. And the more he learned about the true nature of things, the more he realized that all hope for mankind was lost. They are blind, wandering aimlessly in a world they will never understand. Andros was still a man, but he sensed he was evolving into something else, something greater, something sacred. His massive physique had emerged from dormancy, more powerful now than ever before. He finally understood its true purpose. My body is but a vessel for my most potent treasure, my mind. Andros knew his true potential had not yet been realized, and he delved deeper. What is my destiny? All the ancient texts spoke of good and evil, and of man's need to choose between them. I made my choice long ago, he knew, and yet he felt no remorse. What is evil, if not a natural law? Darkness followed light. Chaos followed order. Entropy was fundamental. Everything decayed. The perfectly ordered crystal eventually turned into random particles of dust. There are those who create, and those who destroy. It was not until Andros read John Milton's Paradise Lost that he saw his destiny materialize before him. He read of the great fallen angel, the warrior demon who fought against the light, the valiant one, the angel called Moloch. Moloch walked the earth as a god. The angel's name, Andros later learned, when translated to the ancient tongue, became Malach. And so shall I. Like all great transformations, this one had to begin with a sacrifice, but not of rats nor birds. No, this transformation required a true sacrifice. There is but one worthy sacrifice. Suddenly, he had a sense of clarity unlike anything he had ever experienced in his life. His entire destiny had materialized. For 3 straight days, he sketched on an enormous sheet of paper. When he was done, he had created a blueprint of what he would become. He hung the life-size sketch on his wall and gazed into it as if into a mirror. I am a masterpiece. The next day, he took his drawing to the tattoo parlor. He was ready. Chapter 78. The George Washington Masonic Memorial stands atop Shooter's Hill in Alexandria, Virginia. Built in 3 distinct tiers of increasing architectural complexity from bottom to top, Doric, Ionic, and Corinthian, the structure stands as a physical symbol of man's intellectual ascent. Inspired by the ancient Pharos Lighthouse of Alexandria, Egypt, This soaring tower is capped by an Egyptian pyramid with a flame-like finial. Inside the spectacular marble foyer sits a massive bronze of George Washington in full Masonic regalia, along with the actual trowel he used to lay the cornerstone of the Capitol building. Above the foyer, 9 different levels bear names like the Grotto, the Crypt Room, and the Knights Templar Chapel. Among the treasures housed within these spaces are over 20,000 volumes of Masonic writings, a dazzling replica of the Ark of the Covenant, and even a scale model of the throne room in King Solomon's Temple. CIA agent Simpkins checked his watch as the modified UH-60 chopper skimmed in low over the Potomac. 6 minutes until their train arrives. He exhaled and gazed out the window at the shining Masonic memorial on the horizon. He had to admit, the brilliantly shining tower was as impressive as any building on the National Mall. Simpkins had never been inside the memorial, and tonight would be no different. If all went according to plan, Robert Langdon and Catherine Solomon would never make it out of the subway station. "Over there," Simpkins shouted to the pilot, pointing down at the King Street subway station across from the memorial. The pilot banked the helicopter and set it down on a grassy area at the foot of Shooter's Hill. Pedestrians looked up in surprise as Simpkins and his team piled out, dashed across the street, and ran down into King Street Station. In the stairwell, several departing passengers leaped out of the way, plastering themselves to the walls as the phalanx of armed men in black thundered past them. The King Street Station was larger than Simpkins had anticipated, apparently serving several different lines, blue, yellow, and Amtrak. He raced over to the metro map on the wall, found Freedom Plaza and the direct line to this location.
"Blue line, southbound platform," Simpkins shouted. "Get down there and clear everyone out."
His team dashed off. Simpkins rushed over to the ticket booth, flashed his identification, and shouted to the woman inside.
"The next train from Metro Center. What time is it due?"
The woman inside looked frightened.
"I'm not sure. Blue line arrives every 11 minutes. There's no set schedule."
"How long since the last train?"
5-6 minutes, maybe. No more than that."
Turner did the math. Perfect. The next train had to be Langdon's. Inside a fast-moving subway car, Catherine Solomon shifted uncomfortably on the hard plastic seat. The bright fluorescent lights overhead hurt her eyes, and she fought the impulse to let her eyelids close, even for a second. Langdon sat beside her in the empty car, staring blankly down at the leather bag at his feet.